Time for Midweek Media Watch. Colin Peacock is in studio. Evening, Colin.
Kia ora, Todd.
Nice to not see you.
Yeah, in fact, you gave me a bit of a fright because I tuned in at the top of the hour, you know, to check what was in the news. And then I heard your voice come up and I thought you were introducing me because you said something about coming up old-fashioned mail. But then I realised you were talking about stamps because that was, I think, coming up in the quiz.
Oh, I just thought I'd just given you a fright when you heard my voice anyway. Hey, now, you know, over the last wee while, we've been talking a little bit about jingles for Media Watch, right?
Yes, and it's come up.
We've talked in the office a little bit about that as well. So I've attempted to write a Media Watch jingle for you. In fact, I've got two versions. Are you ready? Just very quickly.
I was assured this wasn't going to happen. But look, I've got an open mind, ready to roll.
I didn't get the memo. Sorry. So this one, for example, Media Watch, Media Watch, it's the best. Media Watch, Media Watch, you don't jest. That's as far as I've got.
Okay, yeah.
Right, that's one. Mm-hmm. And the other one, Media Watch, it informs me. Media Watch, and it's for free. That's it.
Now, that second one, I was going to say it sounded a bit like AI, but AI could improve it. It just sounded a little slightly robotic, but I like the cadence of that one. And if it was set to music, have you got, you know, a bit of blaring horns or something in mind, or a bit of like oonst oonst kind of EDM?
No, well, you know, I'm not into oonst oonst.
Because when Emil Donovan was doing this, he took Hayden Donnell's news review jingle and spun it out to, I think, about 4 minutes long or something like that.
Well, we haven't got all day.
Yeah, I mean, no, really. Indeed. I think short, sharp is better, so I would give you more marks than him for keeping it basic.
Tight and bright.
Perform
tight
it live.
Now, about 40 years ago, I actually recorded a version of Satisfaction at Universal Studios before karaoke was a thing. There's a video that exists with me doing this. I've got the cassette as well of me doing Satisfaction, a version of somewhere. Someone requested it once on Saturday Night Requests.
You never busted it out at the Kilburnie roller rink?
I was there. How do you know that? Did I tell you that?
I've heard you talk about it on air, the Golden Time.
Yeah, was it?
We were happier then.
Those were the days. All right, let's get on to serious things. I mean, here we are with, you know, Media Watch. You know, and speaking of AI and so on, yeah, a bit of editorial fallout from the Herald. Now, last week, Hayden and Emil talked about the revelation that artificial intelligence had been used in a Herald editorial. So how has that developed?
Yes. That was a bit of some fresh news that night. The Herald kind of confirmed that they do use AI, and in that instance, there hadn't been sufficient editorial oversight. That's their policy, that they will use it for certain things, but humans will always be involved. They don't always disclose it to the reader, unlike some of their rivals who will say, if we use it, if the article is substantially a product of AI, they will tell readers about it. That's not the Herald's policy. It's like, trust us, and we will have oversight. In that instance, they didn't. But people were surprised that it was used in an editorial, right, which is, you know, the leader column, the voice of the paper, you know, often, you know, we say, dot, dot, dot. So that was the surprise about that. So it hasn't really developed since then, in that the Herald said all they've got to say and wouldn't confirm whether it had been used in other articles where it appeared that it might have been. But there was a staff meeting earlier today, and that was announced last week, that they said staff could have their say. So that was obviously an in-house affair, no public announcement made about that. But what we understand from some people who did see what was going on there was that it was a fairly long meeting, also carried out online, not just at the Herald and the HQ in Auckland, but no big changes of policy. As I said, they're not going to reconsider at this point their disclosure or use of it, but they did say, I think, that the review of it is ongoing. There were some staff that expressed concerns about the reputation might have been taken a hit for the Herald, but I think that was battered back by the editor-in-chief, who was saying, in fact, as we understand, he was making the argument that actually it is arguable that AI could be used in something like an editorial. And I think the example given, or the concept was, you know, if an editor has an idea and then asks someone else to write about it, which, you know, obviously that's what editors do, that's not all that substantially different. So we also understand that it was reiterated at the meeting that, you know, journalists are encouraged to think of ways to use AI for tasks to increase efficiency and improve journalism, time-saving, things like that. So, yeah, the Herald certainly at the top editorial level not backing down, not considering changing policy, but I think giving staff the message that it's a developing technology, the best practice use of it still being determined. So, you know, it's an ongoing thing. But, yeah, we understand some journalists not entirely satisfied with the approach that's been taken in light of what came out last week.
So any reactions, the reactions from within media on the Herald's use of AI?
Yeah, usually when one media company does something that's controversial, the other media have an outsized kind of interest in putting that forward to their own readers. But no, this time not so much. It wasn't quite like, say, the RNZ editing scandal that popped up last year, the inappropriate editing of international news agency copy about serious topics of international affairs, particularly Russia and Ukraine. But the former editor of the New Zealand Herald, Gavin Ellis, who has a weekly media column every Tuesday, he was quite strong in a column condemning the use of AI for editorials. He headed his column, "What the Hell, capital H-A-L, Were They Thinking?" That's a 2001 Stanley Kubrick Space Odyssey reference, I think.
I there. Can't do that, Hal.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah, open the pod bay doors. Yeah. Exactly. He says a bizarre choice to employ generative AI to create what would be its own opinion. So to do so on an editorial should raise more flags, he says, than a North Korean Workers' Party anniversary. Nice line there. Mm. And he also said, look, he's been an editor and a writer. He knows from direct experience the rigor that has to go into this stuff. Robust discussions, justified points of view, accuracy, quality, all of that have to be ensured. And he says that Murray Kirkness, who's the editor-in-chief at the Herald, so his one of his successors or his current, the person who currently holds that job at the Herald, must give readers, says Gavin Ellis, the former editor-in-chief, an iron-bound guarantee that when Gen AI written editorials will stop, and it won't happen again. So he's obviously going to be disappointed from what we understand happened at that meeting, where that's not going to be what happens.
Hmm. So is it the end of editorials every day? I mean,
possibly. Actually, one thing I should mention is, kind of by coincidence, the ABC, the Australian Public Broadcaster, just today had a live, in front of a studio, but also live-streamed public forum on applications of technology. And this was discussed. Their chair actually came in, Kim Williams, who's worked at a whole range of media companies, very experienced guy. He said he spent a lot of time at Reuters news agency, and he even said at Reuters they're using AI, as the business news organisations are, to churn out facts and figures type stories, machine readable data into stories. But he said by the end of the year, he thinks that stuff written by AI at Reuters will actually be checked by other AI tools. It will have gone that far that the robots are checking their robots. So that's kind of one to watch, I think. Yeah. But sorry, you were asking me end of editorials. Yeah. In the Murray Kirkness's predecessor as the chief editor at the Herald, Shane Curry, is now an editor at large, still working at the Herald and its publisher, NZME. Yeah, he came out and said that he thought it might be time to dump daily editorials in the papers. Yeah.
Yeah. A surprise?
Well, kind of, because, you know, I think it's a prestige product, isn't it, to have the editorial in the paper, and they're such a fixture to have them in each edition. But his argument was this was in the Weekend Herald in his column Media Insider. He said, once upon a time the Herald had a dedicated team of editorial writers, or at least senior editors who had a special focus to consider these opinions on daily issues. He said, now the responsibility falls on a wide cross-section of staff, including journalists who might be specialists. I believe the time has come to scrap that editorial and just have it maybe weekly or twice weekly. And Gavin Ellis, his predecessor, who wrote that strong column of criticism, said, those are the key words here that Shane Curry used. Responsibility falls on. He said it really is a responsibility that they're not taking seriously. So, yeah, Shane Curry thinks time has come actually not to bother with it and just to run these things once or twice a week and not every single day.
So good call then. If there aren't enough senior journos with enough time to write these sort of things.
Possibly. But the thing is, if you're publishing so much opinion elsewhere in your papers, because they're just an absolute fixture now, aren't they? Opinion columns. And often they're, for example, at the Herald, their radio hosts write columns on a whole range of topics about which, frankly, they're not experts. You know, they might still be engaging in well-written columns, not always, but some are. Then it seems odd to publish that stuff and not publish, you know, a higher standard, a kind of premium daily editorial, which shows that, you know, this is the way it can really be done. And just for example, it was in the Weekend Herald where the editorial which brought all this to light about the use of AI was published a couple of weekends ago. Last weekend, I think, was a really good example of how valuable they can be. It was about that Olympic boxing issue and the gender issue that's kind of blown up as a controversy. And it was a really well-written editorial that explained what the things were that were controversial, what the missing facts were that had somehow been buried. And, you know, the paper took a stand of its own and also made the point that the trans community, you know, literally on the sidelines of this event, because it doesn't involve trans people, simultaneously found themselves at the heart of the debate, said the Herald's editorial. They already faced challenges and barriers to participation in sport. Now, said the Weekend Herald editorial, a fight that isn't even theirs is adding to misconceptions about them. And I think that was really well written. And this sort of thing newspaper readers value, I think, an issue's blown up. And here's a well thought out editorial by a pro setting out what the important things are, taking a stand on it. Yeah, really well done. And the same day I read the ODT's weekend edition, which is a very impressive paper, still considering it doesn't have the resources of the Herald or the Stuff Papers big group. They had an excellent one all about the Climate Change Commission review that came out last week, kind of worthy topic, if you like, but one that had been a bit overlooked in the news agenda, and wrote a very good, persuasive and informative editorial. So, yeah, I think they certainly still have their place.
Right, let's go to health. And taking credit for health change, you're less impressed with a recent bit of Herald opinion about the health system.
Yeah, so another one of these pieces I mentioned where some of their radio hosts in the same group for News Talk ZB, they have the same owner, NZME, that publishes the Herald, and they seem to have no problem getting their opinion pieces in the Herald paper or website. So Barry Soper, the senior political correspondent in the Herald, had a column that said, "Ethnicity no longer a factor in waiting list, a fair outcome for all." And it began, or he began it, with the words, "It's not often in this business you can sit back with some satisfaction and feel justified that a year later a story you broke has resulted in a fairer outcome for all." And this related to a scoop of his that filled the front page of the Herald last year and went on, led the ZB News bulletins that day. And it was about, the headline was, you know, "Surgeons express unease at the new scoring tool, describing it as ethically challenging." And this was based on an anonymous surgeon and with views about the equity adjuster score, as it was called. And this is a kind of mechanism to determine surgical priorities, which in which ethnicity was a factor. And that kicked off a big, that morning that it appeared, kicked off a big political debate about race-based healthcare. National Party, ACT Party put out press statements. And, you know, by the end of the day, the Prime Minister, it was Chris Hipkins at the time, Labour League government, had said, yeah, we're going to have to take a look at this. And when the new government came in, that equity adjuster score was completely reversed in line with other policies of that governing coalition. And yeah, Barry Soper is taking the credit.
So if it had an impact and led to a change of policy, fair enough to take credit, even if it's not modest?
Maybe. But it was a very flawed story, which he didn't acknowledge in his column. And the flaws kind of made the reaction worse, because basically the ZB radio host picked up on the story that ran that morning. Mike Hosking told his ZB listeners, "If you're Māori, you go to the front of the queue." And then Kerry Woodham, the next host along in the mornings on ZB, she admitted when she interviewed the then opposition health spokesperson, Dr. Shane Retty, that she didn't know how that equity adjuster score worked. And he was putting her right and saying, look, it doesn't move certain ethnic groups right to the top of the list. And that's what they were telling their audience. And on the early edition show, Kate Hawksby was getting texts from listeners saying, you know, this is medical apartheid. And she also repeated that claim that Māori and Pacific Islanders getting moved to the top of lengthy hospital waiting lists. And that was misleading. And the Broadcasting Standards Authority later said so. And some of the News Talk ZB website stories and Herald ones were kind of quietly changed to remove references to Māori and Pacifica patients rocketing up waiting lists, because that certainly wasn't the only possible outcome of operating that equity adjuster score. And none of that curiously mentioned by Barry Soper in his column taking credit for a change of health policy.
All right, National Party and the conference. They had their annual meeting recently, announced a new policy on teaching maths, wheeled out Sir John again.
Yes, yeah, he's always, when he attends, whatever he says is always big news. But the thing is that some of the commentators, I was interested, they seized on the kind of mood in the arena. And Thomas Manch of Stuff, for example, said, this is evidence the National Party's aging out, living on its golden years, and it knows it's got to change. And I thought it was interesting that he just brushed on, thought, ah, this isn't, because they never focus on the membership of the party. It's always in the leaders or what policy they're going to announce, which they could do any time. You don't have to have a party AGM, but these events, which are about the party members, they're almost invisible. And then the article kind of carried on, as it often does, with, you know, what happened when John Key and the current leader sat down and chit-chatted in front of the audience, and Thomas Manch says the party closed the doors on the media when the two PMs shared the stage, the crowd rollicking with laughter at John Key's stories about his cat. So Thomas must have good sources if the media were shut out, but or if he's just listening at the door, who knows.
Is that pretty common, though? Common to shut the media out like that?
It's becoming more so. And in fact, where there used to be old party conferences, lots of sessions, breakout sessions to discuss topics and regional meetings and so on, often that was at the kind of gift of the people running those sessions, whether the media could come on or not. But more and more, they've been restricted from them. And I thought it was also interesting, Annika Smith for RNZ reported cashed up delegates had forked out $350 a ticket for the conference, and she reckoned they must have, you know, raised the thick end of $200,000 by, you know, selling tickets. But you know, it's, again, it's just interesting that, as I say, those the actual party members about whom these events are really meant to be about, they just become kind of anonymous in the coverage.
Is it really important to know about the party members?
Well, I think it is, because these are mass movements, and it's a shame we don't hear more of them. But, you know, again, it was picked out. Annika Smith in her story said Party President Sylvia Wood encouraged members to find like-minded people in their lives, make them National Party members. We need to get hard, work hard to grow the membership base, and I ask for your support. Said we need younger people, 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, we need to bring in more women. So they're conscious of the need to actually upgrade the membership. And, you know, I thought that could have been the focus of more of the reporting.
I mean, you see and hear the odd vox pop, which is a bit jargony, I know, but a vox pop of party delegates on TV. But is that about all we hear from the rank and file?
Yeah, we do. Actually, here is an example of, you know, the typical political party conference delegate vox pop. This is from Tova O'Brien's report for 3 News last Sunday.
He's got total control of everything.
Oh, he's just fantastic.
The best.
Well, mostly adored.
How's Christopher Luxon doing?
Well, yeah, he's got his own personality. He does things his own way. Probably wouldn't be the way I do things.
Yeah, so not all that informative. It's always about the leader. What do you think? What's the mood? What's the vibe? How do you feel about polling? But with these events, Richard Harman, a veteran journalist who now has his own website, Politic, he's always worth reading because he goes to these events, he does talk to people and talks about things going on behind the scenes. Now, he pointed out that if the same event 3 years ago, also held in South Auckland, I think at the same venue, he said there was turmoil there. There were policy directions, things being argued about conversion therapy, a bit of battle over the presidency at that point, which changed then. So these things were interesting. He had, you know, spoke to the same guy from Rangitata about what was the mood was like 3 years ago and what it is now, about how rural delegates you know, feel about it. That's much more interesting to actually talk to these. But he also says things are changing in the way these things are structured. This is really interesting. He said where they used to have a kind of traditional conference dinner, now they have something called the President's Drinks Function on the Saturday. He said the sponsors were the social media company Topham Garin, who get hired by political parties to do social media campaigns and things like that, and a Wellington focus group organising company called Aureus Research. And, you know, he thinks this is changing, or this is a signal of the way parties are developing their policies. They don't have remits and discussions at conferences anymore and chew over the policy and find out what the members think. It's done by focus group and by ministers assembling groups sometimes even in their own offices, and forming consultative groups and making policy that way. So, yeah, if you observe the way these party conferences go, as Richard Harman does, I think you can pick up signals about the way parties are organised and the way policy is made, which isn't like it used to be in a kind of gathering of mass movement political parties.
On to a different sort of party, the Olympics, I guess, and interesting commentaries and so on. That 100 metres men's final, the photo finish, that was a thrill, wasn't it?
Was it though? I mean, I don't know. Every time I look at these, I get kind of surprised because it's the least surprising thing. It's the shortest race, the fittest people on the planet. It's always going to be close. So when people have this great rush at the end of it, they go, oh, we can't tell who's won. Like, you never can, I think. And I thought it was funny that Nathan Narity over in Paris for RNZ, he tried to sort of liven it up by getting someone back at base to cut 9.78 seconds, it was the winning time of the 100 metres, of Beatles music to illustrate how fast this was. So he teed this up for the listener. Have a listen to this. This will tell you, you know, how quick it was that these guys ran the 100 metres. But, I mean, we know. And I think I don't think he needed to have bothered because I thought Corin Dan did it the way it kind of shouldn't be, should have been done. This was live on Morning Report. This was his kind of impromptu commentary.
Underway now, and it looks like it's going to be the Jamaicans coming through. Ooh, it might be a... I don't know who's won that. It's a very fast time, 9.78 seconds.
See, I reckon that's the way it should be done. Just, you know, ooh, they're off. Wow, they're quick. Oh, it's over. Can't tell who won. You're never going to... I think Corin did it the way all fast sprint racing should be done.
Uh-huh. All right, so he's got a new job.
Speaking of themes, though, before I move on... I should give Nathan Rarity credit because they actually did an accordion remix of their theme tune, which I thought was quite cool. Their first up theme tune is actually accordion for you know, the Paris France Olympics. You know,
yes, I heard that.
I thought you'd have appreciated that touch.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this helping us judge time, trying to impress us with how fast our sensors will tell us 9.78 seconds is in Beatles music. I like the way that Andrew Alderson, the Newstalk ZB Sports bulletin reader, described the result of the speed climbing yesterday.
Incumbent Olympic champion Alexandra Miroslav proved the ultimate mountain goat, setting a world record 6.06 seconds, clambering up the 15-metre incline. Less time than it's taken for me to read this sentence.
So I timed that out. It was over 12 seconds it took him to read that sentence. So I think the speed climber could have got all the way up in record time and almost all the way down and down again in the same record. Mind you, you'd get down even quicker, wouldn't you? So I reckon they would have got up and back, no problems, before he'd read that sentence. But yeah, it's good that they're trying to educate us on the flow of time for when we're just listening to the radio and can't see what's going on. But I would also credit also on ZB, I'm pretty sure this is Elliot Smith. So he was one of the ones, not from the Corin Dan school of understated commentary on that same 100 metres. He'd obviously prepped a kind of biblical line for a possible victory by Noah Lyons for the US in that 100 metres final.
The prophecy is fulfilled. Noah's arc of domination reaches a new peak.
Actually, I think that's Jason Pine. It sounds more like Piney.
Is it Piney?
Oh, it sounds a bit like Piney.
It might be, so yeah, forgive me. But
I employed him 30-something years ago. I probably know.
Well, he's obviously got a biblical education. I thought that was actually quite neat, the prophecy. But
pretty good, though.
I wondered if, like, maybe the commentaries are like that, if the Radio Rima had the rights. Something like that. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of innovating, Andrew Alderson, again, on this is his bulletin on Monday, Sports News Bulletin. I like this idea. It appeared that he was trying to read out the many, many results. I don't know how many you get to pick for a short sports bulletin. You obviously can't fit that many in. Instead of doing it by event, he did it by surname.
And to our Fox watch at the Games, American Kristen Faulkner, whose nickname is Fox, has beaten Marianne Vos, whose name translates from Dutch as Fox, to beat all the other cycling hounds, to take the gold and silver medals in the 158-kilometre Olympic road race. In the men's golf, Ryan Fox has finished in a share of 35th, and Jessica Fox's quest for a historic third Olympic medal in Paris is over, with her sister Naomi Fox.
So I reckon that's about 7 foxes in 27 seconds. Yeah. So I reckon that's medal worthy. Although I would have to admit I did a bit of performance enhancement on that. Okay. I actually shrank it down. It was more like 40-something seconds.
One last commentary. We've got about 10 seconds. We can play this in Portuguese. Quick, here we go. Listen to this.
Yep, the 400-metre relay. This is Brazilian TV commentary.
Segunda colocação. Fique bom. Fique bom. Fique bom. Fique bom. Fique bom.